Hello and a warm welcome to this event hosted by the LSE European Institute and LSE Turkish Studies. We are going to talk about UK-Turkey trade partnership post-Brexit, approximately 1 year after the signing of the bilateral free trade agreement. I'm Professor Yaprak Gürsoy, and I am Professor and Chair of Contemporary Turkish Studies at the LSE European Institute. I'm delighted to be chairing this event today and delighted to welcome our speakers. Before I introduce the speakers, I have a few housekeeping announcements, so please bear with me. For those Twitter users in the audience, the hashtag for today's event is hashtag LSE Turkish Studies. This event is being recorded and will hopefully be made available also as a podcast. Our event will consist of presentations from our speakers, followed by a discussion and a Q&A with the audience. When we come to the Q&A portion of our event, please use the Q&A feature at the bottom of your screen. Questions will be submitted to myself, and I will pose as many as possible to our speakers. Please do let us know your name and affiliation so that we can read that out as well. Now to introduce our speakers in order of speaking. Dr. Mustafa Kutlay is a senior lecturer in the Department of International Politics at City University of London. Dr. Kutlay's research concentrates on comparative politics, political risk analysis, political economy, Turkish political economy, and politics of development in the global south. He has published numerous articles on these subjects, and in the recent years, he has widely contributed to debates and to the literature on Turkish political economy. Dr. Pınar Artıran is an assistant professor, World Trade Organization chairholder, and director of the Research Center on International Trade and Arbitration Law at Istanbul Big University. Her research interests include international economic and investment laws, arbitration, EU competition, and trade laws. In addition to her academic research, she has also served as a consultant for the Turkish Ministry of Trade between 2018 and 2021 at the height of Turkish-UK trade negotiations. Our third speaker is Lord Robin Jandrin, who is an independent crossbench member of the House of Lords and was the Prime Minister's trade envoy to Turkey from 2015 to 2021. During this time frame, naturally, he visited Turkey a number of times and participated in discussions around the bilateral trade deal. But he previously also served in the British Diplomatic Service and the Royal Household at Buckingham Palace, including as the Queen's private secretary, effectively her chief of staff. Christopher Gaunt, OBE, is the chairman of the British Chamber of Commerce, Turkey. Aside from his invaluable international business experience across a number of key sectors, he has been extensively engaged in developing relations and partnerships between Turkish and British businesses. He has key business knowledge from both sides and also a Eurasian perspective due to his previous business experience in the broader region. Now I'm delighted to hand over to Mustafa to begin his presentation.
Oh, thank you very much, Yaprak. It's a great pleasure for me to participate in this panel. I'd like to focus on the political economy of Turkey's foreign trade relations in my short intervention, and I will particularly try to locate it within the shifts in global order. I mean, nowadays, clearly trade is one of the controversial topics in global politics. I mean, over the last few years, for instance, trade has become increasingly politicized. I mean, the election of Donald Trump as the 45th president of the United States gave momentum to a new episode of trade and technology wars in global political economy. So, I mean, these are exciting times to talk about politics and economics of foreign trade relations. In the heyday of globalization process during 1990s or early 2000s, trade was mainly considered as a powerful tie that binds countries together. The conventional understanding was mostly benign. I mean, it was mainly perceived as a tool to facilitate convergence among nations with different political systems and foreign policy interests. Since then, however, things changed considerably. I mean, with increasing share of non-Western powers in global production and trade, new markets emerged, and this is clearly an opportunity. But on the other hand, actually, it brought about certain conflicts or certain issues. And also supply chains became much more complicated, but at the same time fragile, as we witness with the COVID-19 pandemic. By the way, I'm not saying that power dimension or advantage of expanding economic networks did not have nothing to do with conflictual nature of trade during 1990s or early 2000s. I mean, stated differently, I mean, power dimension or conflictual nature of trade or distributive consequences of trade has always been on the agenda of experts. However, during 1990s or early 2000s, this was not the main discourse that set the tone for the debate. So we see a significant transformation in terms of politics of trade in global political economy over the last decade or so. And today, several countries are trying to advantage of expanding economic networks by becoming part of regional integration schemes or signing free trade agreements. But there is also a growing emphasis on the politics of trade as part of economic statecraft. And I think Turkey's foreign economic policies can also be assessed within this broader context. In line with the shifts in global political economy, trade has remained an important instrument in Turkey's foreign policy for quite a long time, especially since Turkey's transition to free trade-oriented neoliberal policies in 1980s with Turgut Özal's presidency. And the Justice and Development Party governments also put special emphasis on trade as part of foreign policy agenda. I mean, especially in the first decade of the 21st century. I mean, some scholars, for instance, developed a new research agenda on Turkey's trading state potential in its foreign relations. Clearly, with massive regional instability starting from early 2010s, security issues dominated foreign policy agenda, yet foreign economic relations remained important. So in line with growing weight of new markets in global economy, especially non-Western markets in Asia, and of course in different parts of the world, Turkish business people have also been seeking for alternative ways to build new trade and investment ties with several countries in Asia, Africa, and Middle East. And we see this transformation when we look at trade data. For instance, in 2002, Turkey's exports to the European Union represented almost 50% of its overall exports. This declined to around 40% in 2020. At the same time frame, Turkey's exports to Near and Middle East increased from 10 to 20% of its overall exports. And this is despite the geopolitical turmoil going on in Middle East and North Africa over the last decade or so. And similarly, the share of Africa in Turkey's overall export volume doubled. So in this context, I can suggest Russia and China have become increasingly central economic partners for Turkey as trade volume increased rapidly. I mean, Turkey, for instance, announced the Asia NEV initiative in 2019, which was designed to develop new political and economic ties with non-Western world. These are facts, of course. I mean, when we look at data, we see this transformation, and this goes parallel to the shifts in global political economy. I would argue, however, that Turkey's relations with the West are still the most important aspect in terms of Turkey's foreign trade and investment relations. And as we analyzed in a recently published, I mean, co-authored paper, most probably it's likely to remain so in the foreseeable future. In that sense, I think improving economic relations between Turkey and the European Union, as well as with the UK for that matter, serves the best interest of all parties, and especially for Turkey for two reasons. And the first, trade with the European Union represents 45% of Turkey's overall foreign trade, and bilateral ties are highly institutionalized due to customs union deal, which was effective since 1996. And also 67% of Turkey's foreign direct investment comes from Western countries. It is true that a kind of diversification taking place in Turkey's foreign trade relations, but It's also true that the European Union is still the most important economic actors for Turkey when it comes to foreign trade and investments. Second, Turkey's trade relations with the West are on a more balanced footing. I mean, this point is also important because if you look at the export-import ratio with the West, we see that it's around 95%, which is actually less than 20% when it comes to its export-import ratio with BRICS countries. By the way, within BRICS, especially Russia and China, matter a lot for Turkey because most of Turkey's foreign trade actually is with Russia and China. So for these two main reasons, I would suggest that European Union, and of course, developing further trade relations with the United Kingdom, remain an important item on the agenda of Turkey's foreign economic relations. And from the EU's point of view, Turkey also constitutes a major market and economic hub for hundreds of European firms, especially in the face of growing challenge that comes from dynamic emerging powers. So developing closer economic ties matters a lot for several European Union member states. I mean, such as Turkey has strong and resilient trade relations with Germany, France, Spain, or Italy. And this is despite deteriorating political ties with the European Union over the last decade or so. And I think, this is my final point actually, Turkey-UK trade partnership should also be analyzed within this broader context. I mean, it was a welcome development for Turkish policymakers and business community to sign a free trade agreement with the United Kingdom after Brexit, because it helped protect the existing robust commercial ties between the two countries. And there is also strong political will on both sides and the policymakers in the UK and Turkey, and they already expressed their interest, for instance, expanding this free trade agreement into new areas and come up with a deeper and more comprehensive deal. But apart from the willingness of both parties, I will say that the future of Turkey's trade relations with the European Union will also be quite important and should be taken into account. This is mainly because of Turkey's customs union deal, and next speakers actually will talk about this issue in further detail, I'm sure. So Turkey signed a customs union deal in 1995, and since then, the EU's external trade relations shape policy options for Turkey in the export of manufactured goods. But customs union is politically asymmetric. I mean, Turkey is not included in formal decision-making processes in the EU's external trade policies. And also, it is an outdated deal after 25 years. I mean, it needs to be expanded into other sectors, such as services, agriculture, and public procurement, etc. So the point is that I'd like to make, discussion on customs union is not merely technical. I mean, there is a lot of technical side of the issue for sure, and most probably we'll discuss these issues in further detail in the following minutes. But apart from that, there is a political side to the issue, and it boils down to the question as to whether or how Turkey and the EU would be able to devise a new working relationship if membership does not seem a likely scenario, at least for the foreseeable future. So working on new modalities of bilateral partnership is therefore necessary. And this is a strategic decision for both sides, more than being a technical issue. I mean, the current mode in Turkey's relations with the European Union is kind of a transactional interaction, but there are significant problems associated with this way of conducting business. So perhaps we can discuss this issue in a little bit more detail in the Q&A session. And clearly this will have implications in terms of where both sides will stand in times of growing geoeconomic rivalry, as I tried to mention briefly in the first of my intervention. And clearly it's directly related to the fact that it is at the end of the day a political issue, and it relates to how both sides pursue each other in a shifting international order. I want to stop at this point. Perhaps we can elaborate on different dimensions in the Q&A session. Yaprak, thank you very much again for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mustafa, for that global political overview. And now we turn to Pınar to provide a perspective from trade law.
Yaprak, thank you very much to yourself. And once again, congratulations for your recent appointment as the Turkish Studies Chair at LSE. And I would like to take the opportunity to thank yourself, as well as the LSE European Institute. It's a major honor for myself to share the scene today together with the audience, but very distinguished speakers. So my intervention today, I'm going to complement what Mustafa had just said, about looking at the overall political aspect of the trade relations that Turkey is entertaining with the other countries. But in my intervention, I try to first look at the Turkey-EU customs union that he has already alluded to. And I'll try to show the implications that this agreement creates for other trade agreements, and in our case today, particularly the Turkey-UK trade agreement. But before doing that, I'll try to show you a couple of texts, and I think they are pretty illustrative. We shouldn't forget that any trade agreement in the world that we are currently seeing are part of the World Trade Organization, because normally we live in a rules-based multilateral trading system, and within this multilateral trading system, we have to treat everyone equally. But if we want to just cherish some of the countries in terms of closer trade, then you have to benefit from certain exceptional rules in international trade. And that's what the EU is about. That's what the Turkey-UK Free Trade Agreement is about. And that's what the Turkey-EU Customs Union is about. I'm going to show you in the coming slides the latest trade policy review for the EU, where Turkish government made some comments about the expansion of the European Union and in general politics and agreements that it handles with the United Kingdom. Later on, I will quickly turn to the decision 1/95 of the Turkey-EU Association Council decision, which effectively establishes the customs union itself. Then in terms of this modernization and the problems that existed between Turkey and European Union, which actually even led, I will dare to say, the United Kingdom to exit the European Union, because one of the things I did in my recent professional past, I have provided written and oral evidence to the UK House of Commons and House of Lords during the Brexit negotiations. So therefore, as I had said there, I think the United Kingdom had got some lessons from the Turkey-EU Customs Union, and I'll try to show that in that decision in the 2014 World Bank report. And then, of course, there is this famous EU Commission's recommendation for a council decision to open Turkey-EU Customs Union modernization talks. And on the other side, the Turkish government, I understand, had undertaken a study, which it was commissioned by the World Trade Institute in 2016. And there are certain comments there as well. And then I will end with my own final remarks. What you see in front of you now is a slide where I show the trade policy review which has been undertaken for the EU within the World Trade Organization, where we see the Turkish government, and I quote, "Brexit will have immediate effects on our Turkey-EU customs union, and any future partnership between the EU and the UK will affect this customs union. How does the EU plan to include Turkey in its partnership with the UK in the future?" And I'm just quoting the answer by the EU. I'm just skipping the first part. And at the end, the EU says, "The EU is committed to keep Turkey closely informed of the development pursuant to the specific relationship under the EU-Turkey Customs Union." So in the coming minutes, Yaprak and the distinguished audience and speakers, I'll try to show what is this specific relationship. Because clearly, as Mustafa said, there are problems that are reigning in this relationship. And the fact that Turkish government is asking this question within the WTO trade policy review to the EU, but not somewhere else in a bilateral talk or elsewhere, actually shows the shortcomings of this trade relation between the parties. Now, this famous customs union decision between Turkey and the European Union came into being with a decision by the Association Council, which is the highest decision-making organ for Turkey and the European Union. And there, when you look at the articles 12, 13, and 16, it clearly says that Turkey is trying to have a customs union arrangement with the European Union, where Turkey will always have to follow the European Union's lead, because it says Turkey, in relation to countries which are not members of the community, let's say the United Kingdom, let's say Canada, let's say any country where Turkey did not have a trade agreement at the time, will have to apply provisions and implementing measures which are substantially similar to those of the community's commercial policy. What does that mean? That means the European Union will always the first, will be the leader to conclude a trade agreement with a third country. Turkey can only later on jump in and try to conclude an agreement. And that was the main problem with the United Kingdom, because the United Kingdom is, you know, if not the only one, is, you know, among the very few countries in the world where Turkey has a trade surplus instead of a trade deficit, because with many countries, we actually have a major trade deficit, but the UK was a great example where we had a trade surplus. And we wanted to keep this trade surplus. But these articles that you're seeing in front of you in the Turkey EU Customs Union decision was pushing back Turkey to wait until the EU signs a deal. And that's why throughout the last 3 or 4 years, when the European Union was negotiating its own trade deal with the United Kingdom, Turkey was trying to do its best. And thankfully, we know that by the 1st of January, 2021, this deal was okay and it entered into force in order to make it a rollover agreement like all of the trade agreements that the United Kingdom was trying to do. So then we also need to see if, you know, there is this problem that Mustafa rightly said, this is an asymmetrical relationship, because you have a trade agreement where the European Union is supposed to be the leader to sign trade agreements with third countries, and the country with which it has a customs union arrangement can only come from the behind scenario. And this is clearly something that probably the United Kingdom did not want either, because if you are a member of the European Union, due to the common commercial policy, the EU in Brussels designs everything, because that is the exclusive competence area. And the other countries which are members of the union, and because the EU is also a customs union, have to follow from the back. So all this asymmetrical relationship has been shown in World Bank's 2014 report. And in this report, we see that the World Bank says, and by the way, this report was commissioned by the European Commission to the World Bank in order to modernize this customs union. So the World Bank says there has to be a closer relationship between the parties. This relationship, this customs union, is better than a free trade agreement. But this asymmetrical relationship that you are seeing in the slide is the major problem in this relationship. And the way we can give an example to this asymmetrical relationship is that when the European Union signs an agreement with a third country, let's say Japan, let's say Canada, let's say United Kingdom, if Turkey does not have a parallel agreement to this one, which was signed by the EU, then all of the products of these countries have free access to the Turkish market, but the Turkish products do not have the same easy access to those markets. That's the asymmetrical relationship. And it has been clearly mentioned in 2014 World Bank report. So the European Commission, seeing this report, commissioned its own report in 2016 to a private, you know, consultancy company where I also acted as a consultant for this report. And this report, which was backed by the European Commission, this independent consultancy report, also, you know, clearly spelled out that there was this, you know, asymmetrical relationship. And I quote, Turkey has become concerned about its obligation to essentially follow the EU's commercial policy with third countries without legal means to convince the EU's FTA partners to conclude FTAs also with it in parallel. This also limits Turkey's ability to negotiate and obtain access to the markets of certain EU FTA partners. Such design issue is Turkey's obligation to align its technical legislation. So therefore, actually, this problem is showing to us that this asymmetrical relationship is not only recognized by the World Bank, but also the European Union. The Turkish government also organized a consultancy, and actually in this case, it was the World Trade Institute, which prepared a report for Turkish government to show the shortcomings of this customs union. Here again, it shows how this customs union is important for Turkey and for both of the parties. But Turkey will lose a lot if we actually leave this customs union and try to make it a free trade agreement. So therefore, this outdated trade relationship with the European Union has to, you know, bring a certain benefit only if, you know, the parties can renew it. Now, in terms of, you know, the relation between Turkey and the United Kingdom and the European Union and Turkey, Turkey can only sign agreements because it has to, you know, comply with the EU's common commercial policy. Our customs union includes only industrial products and processed agricultural products. So therefore, when we are signing a trade agreement, including the United Kingdom, we can only make market access commitments in terms of industrial products as well as processed agricultural products. But we know that today in 2022, the trade relationships around the world is much more than just goods. There is digitalization, there is services, public procurement, electronic commerce, and everything. So therefore, you know, with perhaps the experience that we have seen, you know, when the United Kingdom was negotiating with the European Union, and with our own experience in Turkey, when we are negotiating with the European Union, we have to get ready for certain new items that will be added into our trade agreement modernization. We need a functioning dispute settlement arbitration mechanism, because it's like a marriage. When you have a customs union, you will inevitably have some quarrels, some misunderstandings, etc. And there must be a place where you can solve this problem. When you look at the UK-EU trade and cooperation agreements, you see it perfectly. We need to have an enhanced and inclusive institutional framework, which didn't exist in the Turkey-EU customs union, but you can see that it exists in the UK-EU trade relationship because there were some lessons which were drawn from the relation with Turkey. Commercial policy convergence will always be there. Now that we have the EU Green Deal and Fit for 55 purpose, the regulatory convergence is even more important for Turkey because the deal that Turkey signed in 1996 is no longer the same trade agreement. We now have this important tool and we have to, you know, get ready. And my final point is that just like the United Kingdom has experienced it with the European Union in its own trade negotiations, I think the most important item will be for Turkey in the coming, you know, years for any modernization efforts is the trade and sustainable development chapters of the trade agreements in new generation trade agreements that the European Union prepares. You see it in Japan Economic Partnership Agreement. You see it in all the new agreements that the European Union is, you know, currently negotiating, all the environmental protection, labor rights protection, gender protection, trade and gender equality, etc. So these are the major things that we will need to face. And I very much hope that actually, you know, both the you know, decision makers, politicians, as well as academics will, you know, carefully look at the agreement which was signed between the United Kingdom and Turkey and see what is awaiting us in the future when the time comes for Turkey and the European Union to modernize this customs union. I hope very much, Yaprak, that I didn't, you know, overdo my time. My apologies if I did. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that very thorough analysis of Turkey's customs deal with the European Union. And we will continue the discussion, I think, in the Q&A portion of the event. Now, next up, we have Robin, who is going to talk about the British perspective when it comes to bilateral trade.
Yeah, Prak, thank you very much. And a good afternoon, everybody. And thank you, Yaprak, for the invitation to participate. Just a quick word on what a trade envoy is. I suppose you could say they're parliamentarians picked by the British government to specialise, if you like, almost quasi junior trade ministers, but specialising in one market. And I did it. I was a trade envoy to Turkey for about 6 years. Just a couple of health warnings. One is I am a bit out of date because I finished as trade envoy a couple of years back, just before COVID. And the other thing is that I'm not speaking for the government. I'm an independent peer in the House of Lords, and any views I express are my own and are not British government views. I should make that clear. I want to make three very broad points, and I'll elaborate on each of them. I want to make the point that trade, commerce, and investment are long-term plays. My second point is that the UK-Turkey trading relationship is very strong and probably, certainly in the UK, under-recognised. And my third point is that this now, 2022, and the next couple of years, is a really significant time for our trading relationship. So let me unpack those three particular points. We're very conscious, at least I am, in the political world, that the political horizon tends to be the next day's headline, the next newscast, et cetera, et cetera. But we all know that trade and investment decisions are taken for 3, 5, 10 years. This is a long-term game. And if you're in a long-term game, you need to look and you need to keep an eye on the fundamentals underlining a particular relationship. And I just want to underline just how strong the UK-Turkey fundamentals are, because I think one tends to forget them in the froth of day-to-day relationships. First of all, I don't think one should forget the historical view, the historical experience of both our countries. I was reminded quite recently that you can explain Brexit in terms of the Reformation in the 16th century. In other words, one needs to look at history, and both UK and Turkey have a very strong trading history, trading relationship, and they are outward looking countries. They're not looking inwards. They never have. And I think that's terribly important. Secondly, they both have a very strong entrepreneurial culture. And I think that that's something that we will build on and find ways of building on. And I'll come back to that. And third, the very obvious geographical point, that we bookend the European landmass with all the consequences, political, religious, cultural, throughout history that implies. We're both slightly outliers of that central European area. And we both have, I would suggest, very strong underlying strengths. The UK is the fifth or sixth, depending on how you count it or whether you're talking to the French, largest economy in the world. We have an enviable tradition of stability, rule of law, which is hugely important when you're talking about 5-10 year investment decisions. We have world-class universities, we have the English language, et cetera, et cetera. But Turkey has some really fundamental strengths, which I underline every time I talk about the importance of Turkey. Its crucial geopolitical situation goes without saying throughout history, but its demographic strengths, 80 million people, average age, I think I'm right in saying around 30, 31. This is a young, dynamic country, an educated workforce, very strong technical skill education system, and recent experience of high economic growth with some very, very important and world-class economic sectors, construction, engineering, etc. So we're talking about two countries which have different strengths, but fundamental strengths. And I think in looking at my first point, that we're looking at the long term here, those underlying strengths can never be ignored. My second point was that the existing relationship is very strong. And I think tends certainly in the UK to be slightly unrecognized. The UK is Turkey's second largest export market. The total trade, and Christopher was reminding us, me just for off air, reached about 19 billion UK sterling before COVID. I gather it's dropped a bit since then. But that is more than we export more to Turkey than Russia or Brazil or Mexico. It's a hugely important market for the UK. We're the second or third largest source of foreign direct investment in Turkey. And it's interesting that major British companies are continuing to look to Turkey to set up regional hubs. And we've recently seen Bupa and Dyson both set up major investments in Turkey. We've talked a little bit, and Pinar, you were extremely interesting about this, the difficulties of sorting out the free trade agreement that was eventually reached, and just how complicated this was, because we were exiting the European Union and Turkey is part of the customs union. And so it was hugely important that we had a rollover agreement, which was incredibly difficult because of the timing of some of the decisions in if you like, both negotiations to achieve. And I think it speaks volumes that both sides recognized, and believe you me, I think the Turkey, they're known to be tough negotiators, but I think both sides realized that it was essential to get that free trade agreement, the rollover agreement, at the timing and on the timing that it was achieved. And I think that bodes very well with the for the future. I said underrecognized this relationship because I think my experience talking to audiences in the UK is that there's been so much focus on Brexit and the relationship with the European Union, and so much focus on what does global Britain mean, that the sort of flesh on the bones are often not there. But when one actually looks at beyond the rhetoric, it is precisely relationships with and trading relationships with countries like Turkey, where we've got strong fundamentals, and both have a willingness to look to the future, and that makes it so important. And I would say that has been a little bit unrecognized in the past. I hope it's not true at the moment. And my third point I mentioned was that this is a very significant time for our commercial relationship. Certainly as a and I'll leave Chris, who follows me, may well want to talk about this, but there are some very important areas of collaboration which are opening up. We're the ones talking about tech, financial services, healthcare, energy, clean energy, et cetera. That there are some really important areas where the UK and Turkey ought to be focusing and looking at the operation, looking at opportunities to work together. The second point I would make is that the opportunities for third country collaboration, UK and Turkey working together in third countries, and working with Turkish strengths in construction and engineering and UK strengths with export finance, professional services, consultancy, et cetera, with Turkey's knowledge of Central Asia and UK knowledge of Africa, say, that you have here some real opportunities for trading partnerships where the two countries are working together in third countries. And there are some very good examples of that beginning to happen. A big power plant in Syria, I remember, and in my time, and one or two others, but huge opportunities there. And then looking ahead, there is this prize of a new free trade agreement, a 2.0, if you like to call it. And Chris, I think you will probably want to cover this in more detail, but it is extremely important to us. There is a bit of a queue when I talk to people in our Department of International Trade, difficult it is for them to focus on too many areas at once, but trying to ensure that Turkey is well up there in the queue, and I believe you me, I think it is, certainly one of my roles when I was trade envoy, to keep reminding people, if you like, back in base, back in government, just what a huge opportunity this is. My final point is, and it came out a bit both in what Mustafa was saying and certainly in what Pina was saying. We're both trying to, the UK and Turkey, we're trying to redefine build for the future our relationship with the EU at a time when we're looking at supply chains and global issues post-COVID with all the pressures, et cetera, that we have. But we're both looking strangely from two ends of, if you like, geographically, two ends of Europe, at trying to work out what is going to make sense for Turkey, what is going to make sense for the UK in the relationship with Europe in the future. And I would simply say, and going back to my historical point, well, what's new with that?
Excellent, many thanks for that. And last but certainly not least, Chris, to give us the business perspective.
You're mute, Chris.
you are on mute, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, all right.
Technology's passed me by, I'm afraid, but I'm getting used to it by now. But yeah, I'd just like to congratulate you on your 30 years anniversary. You know, this is going to be at least another 30 years of your analysis and assessment of various global issues from the London School of Economics. So well done on the 30 years. And just following up on, the content and the high level analysis of both Pina and Robin and Mustafa. I mean, we work as a British Chamber of Commerce in Turkey. We are the second oldest British Chamber overseas. And it just again is a good example of what Robin was talking about the long-standing trading relationship that Turkey and UK have had. I mean, we were established in 1887. So, we've got more than 133 years of the British Chamber of Commerce in Turkey. And that's another example of this strong trading relationship that's been in existence for that period of time and for longer. So, that's something that, stands us in good stead. We have a high reputation here. You know, UK is considered a destination for inward investment. It's also a destination for you know, sharing technology and expertise. So the relationship between Turkey and UK is very strong. And as Robin said, you know, the fundamentals are very strong as well. So we've got a lot to build on. And you know, the free trade agreement, yes, it did go through some difficult periods, but at the last minute on the 29th of December, we managed to get it across the line. And that was, you know, due to, you know, some long negotiations that were held both in Ankara and in London from both parties in making sure that they were ready and prepared to move forward once UK had left the EU. And the complexities going forward are still there. I'm well aware, talking to my colleagues in other European chambers who are based in Turkey, that they are pushing very hard to get the customs union agreement renegotiated and enhanced and brought up to what modern day expectations are. And yeah, that's something that I think, you know, has to happen for Turkey in order to move forward. I mean, if you look at the way global trade has gone, you know, over the last 20 years, we've had a number of headwinds. We've had the 2008 economic crisis. We've had, you know, other geopolitical issues that have you know, set economies back. But we've all come back, and you know, we've increased our presence in most aspects. So, you know, it's having a trading relationship that is both flexible and adaptable to, you know, whatever is going to happen in the future. And, you know, there's lots of potential for Turkey. I mean, it's my belief and our belief here in Turkey of the British business community that, you know, Turkey has a lot of headroom for growth in terms of its own economy and also its regional trading presence within this region. And, you know, this is a point I'd just like to make. And, you know, again, Robin made reference to it. I mean, Turkey as a regional hub, you know, is a massive opportunity for UK exporters. If you look at the big major global operations, companies that are hubbed out of Turkey, and particularly in Istanbul. I mean, the company I work for more than 15, 16 years, Coca-Cola, is hubbed out of Istanbul, responsible for over 90 countries. And you look at Microsoft, you look at the tech companies, you look at Procter & Gamble, Unilever, the German companies are all hubbed out of Turkey and are responsible for, you know, countries across the region stretching into the Middle East and into Africa. So it's this history that Turkey has of its trading relationships and its knowledge and expertise that it has in the region that, you know, again, offers major opportunity for UK exporters. I mean, we advocate to UK exporters that, you know, you shouldn't look at Turkey purely as a domestic market. You should look at it as both a domestic and a regional market because of its connections, trading connections that go back historically. I mean, people again seem to misunderstand what Turkey is all about. I mean, you know, it's been a trading nation for thousands of years. You know, it's the end of the Silk Route. It's where everything was traded from, you know, China and India into Europe. And anybody that's visited Istanbul and gone to the Grand Bazaar and enjoyed their negotiating and whatever on products in the Grand Bazaar, you know, have to look at the history of what, you know, that particular location has. I mean, that's where everything was traded historically. And, you know, this is why Turkey has this, you know, amazing strategic position where, you know, it bridges the old cliche between Europe and Asia. And, you know, it's just as important today as it's ever been. And this is why, you know, the trading relationship that we have with Turkey, you know, has to be resilient and sustainable. And thankfully, we did get this rollover agreement done at the last minute at the end of 2020. So, there are many positives. And, you know, when you look at, you know, the way that the private sector in Turkey has been resilient, how it's sort of endured, you know, certain problems that are both a result of global geopolitical or global economic problems and also domestic problems, the private sector has remained resilient and has continued to grow. And you know, when we talk to UK companies about what Turkey has to offer, and you start highlighting certain aspects of the private sector, I mean, which other emerging market has a, you know, a Fortune 500 company in it? I mean, I don't think I could think of any other one apart from Turkey. And you know, you've got Koç Group, who is a Fortune 500 company. And that's another indication of what Turkey is actually capable of, both in terms of its management, in terms of, you know, its long trading tradition, in terms of its manufacturing capability. You know, everything's there. And you know, I asked the question of UK companies, you know, do you have a white Ford Transit van when I'm doing you know, talks and roadshows in the UK? And you know, pretty everybody puts their hand up and says, oh yeah, we've got a track. I said, do you know where it was manufactured? No, well, it was made in US or Europe. So I said, no, it was manufactured in Turkey. And you know, this is when they start to wake up and listen, when they understand what the, you know, the industrial manufacturing capability of Turkey is. And you know, the other question, I'm sorry, I'm promoting Koç Group here, but yeah, I asked them, have they got a Beko washing machine or a refrigerator? And you know, you asked them where that was manufactured, and you know, it was in Europe or China or whatever. No, it's a Turkish company. And so these things, you know, once you start conveying all this positivity and capability to UK companies, that's when they start to become very interested. And it's taken some time, and I know Robin's been working tirelessly over the 6 years that he was trade envoy to actually get people to understand what Turkey's all about. And we still have some issues there in getting UK companies to really understand Turkey's history, Turkey's modernization, and where Turkey stands in the global world of economies. And you know, it's still targeted to be one of the 12th largest economies in the world in the next sort of 25 years. So you know, the potential is there, the fundamentals are there. It's not a short-term sprint by any means. Turkey is a long-term commitment. And when you talk to the UK investors that have come to Turkey, that's how they see it. They see their growth opportunity in a major strategic regional country that offers the opportunity both to operate locally and regionally and in a wider space as well. So you know, they see it as a long-term commitment. They see it as long-term potential. And all the fundamentals clearly indicate that you know, their analysis is absolutely right. And you know, the UK, you know, is part of that. And when we were looking at you know, areas of growth, particularly in technology and in other areas of fintech and you know, what's coming down the line in terms of global sustainability and ESG, you know, all those areas where UK has got capability, Turkey's moving very quickly along in developing and embedding you know, these sustainability goals in their organizations, but there's still some way behind. And UK has an opportunity to help Turkey sort of move that agenda further forward. And given its renewable capability when it comes to solar power and wind, you know, it's got enormous potential there that you know, UK companies have got expertise and technology that can add value to you know, the Turkish renewable sector. So you know, you've got all these areas which offer potential and win-wins for both countries. And you know, this is what we have to you know, continue to promote and ensure that you know, UK companies fully understand what Turkey's potential is. And when we look at the, you know, the bilateral trade that you know, we managed to achieve, £19 billion in the end of 2019, pre-COVID, and yeah, it has dropped back a bit since then, and that's not to be, you know, it's not a surprise. I mean, all countries have seen that their businesses suffer, in particular export. But you know, if we can build on where we are now, and you know, when we sit down and renegotiate our free trade agreement, which is currently established in the existing free trade agreement that we will renegotiate it in over the next 2 years, and we're bringing new sectors that are compatible for both countries. So we've got agriculture as a big opportunity, healthcare, we've got technology, we've got education, all those areas, fintech, that is something that Turkey's future is going to be part of, and the UK definitely has a role to play in all that. So once these negotiations will start, which will probably be around September 2022, then we'll be looking to a future that will probably double our bilateral trade over the next 10 to 15 years. So it's the opportunities are definitely there, and the dynamics that have been mentioned already about population that's mostly under 30, or half the population's under 30, and the expectations of Turkish youth is also a major factor in this, in that their expectations are high. They want Turkey to grow. They want Turkey to be, not just a manufacturing and industrial power, they also want it to be an economic power. And, all these messages are coming through, and the people we talk to, and particularly young people, are very ambitious for the country. And, once you've got that embedded in a country, then, the prospects for the future are very positive. I mean, moving on to other areas of, how we develop that. I mean, I don't want to go into the complexities of renegotiating free trade agreements or the relationship with the EU, but I mean, there are experts from Pinar's gone through that, and Robin's related to that as well, so I'm not going to go into that. But as far as the UK is concerned, I mean, we want to be a global trading nation. That's one of the main reasons why we left the EU. And Turkey has a major role to play in that. And we're signing rollover agreements, continuity agreements around the world. But when it comes to actually growth markets, Turkey is one of the biggest opportunities, which is closer to UK than any other growth emerging market. So it's on our doorstep. And because of our long-standing political and trading relationship with Turkey, this has to be a priority for the Department for International Trade, to make sure that we put everything in place so we can maximize the opportunity and ensure that we have a long-term sustainable bilateral prosperity for both countries. I mean, yes, we'll continue to develop other free trade agreements around the world. But as I say, Turkey has to be high on the agenda in making sure that we've actually consolidated our position there and put in place long-term strategy to ensure that we work together to realize the potential of both markets. So there's, as I say, there's a lot of optimism. We're going through a difficult period at the moment. I mean, the Turkish economy is having some problems, but I think we'll get through that, and eventually, we'll start to see opportunities, which will become clearer as we move forward. And everybody's suffering from economic issues. UK suffering from economic issues, so it's nothing unique. But out of adversity, we also are seeing a level of opportunity, and we believe that Turkey has long-term potential for UK, and the bedrock will be this free trade agreement that's already in place. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. We are open to questions from the audience. I already see a number of questions. While you keep your questions coming, let me also remind everyone that you can vote your favorite questions and move them up and down. So if you want a question to be asked in particular, please vote. And so I will ask that question first. But before we move to the question and answer from the audience, I would like to give the opportunity to the speakers to respond to one another. and perhaps also use my prerogative as the chair and ask the brief questions to the speakers. So Mustafa, you said that we need to be working on new modalities between Turkey and the EU. So at the moment it's a transactional relationship, but I was wondering if how these new modalities can take shape. At the very beginning of Brexit, I think there was a bit of hope on the Turkish end that we would be able to take the British model. Whatever Brexit model turned out to be the case, maybe it would also be something that Turkey would be able to use. But the way the negotiations went, I think that hope has altogether but disappeared. But still, you know, because the EU and Britain, their partnership or their negotiations are not really over. Do you see this possibility that whatever deal, the final deal in the future, the EU makes with Britain would be a model for Turkey as well? So that will be my question to you. For Pınar, I think towards the end of your talk, You mentioned trade and sustainable development, and Chris also mentioned that. So I was wondering if you could explore that a little bit more, because what will be the connection between Turkey's customs union upgrade and Turkey's FTA version 2 with Britain? So would we expect in both of these deals with the customs union and with the free trade agreement with Britain, sustainable development to become an issue? And would Turkey have to negotiate these both at the same time with both entities? So how would that work? And I think I will ask Robin and Chris a joint question. Both of you said that Turkey is, place in a global economy and regional economy is not really appreciated by British companies. So I wonder if that is possibly because Turkey is already seen within the European framework, within, and not necessarily the European Union, but because Turkey is part of the customs union agreement, perhaps also politically as well, is it already covered within the broader umbrella of trade with the European Union? So is it possible that Turkey is not really appreciated because it is already in the customs union, if you know what I mean? And it might be not necessarily a very concrete or conscious decision not to think of Turkey as as a country that can go beyond Europe and expand towards other regions, but it could be an implicit understanding that Turkey's value besides or beyond Europe is not really recognized. All right, so perhaps we can start from the reverse order. I don't know what you think, but we can start with Chris and end with Mustafa. So I will ask all of you to be as brief as possible, of course, because I already see we have 7 or 8 questions.
So, do you want me to talk about the sustainability issue, or where should we start with this on these questions?
Well, it is your choice, but I was wondering more about your perspective in terms of why Turkey is not really that much appreciated.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one to answer. I mean, we shouldn't forget that as a state, Turkey is a relatively new country. I mean, it's, you know, since 1923, and, you know, it will celebrate, you know, 100 years in a year's time. So whether that has something to do with it, you know, the understanding of, you know, the previous Ottoman Empire and, you know, the various issues, I mean, we still get I mean, Turkey, although it sits strategically between Europe and Asia, you know, some people still think it's more Middle Eastern and in UK, and then again, some people see it as more European. And you know, getting those sort of that clarification understood is one thing. But as I say, it seems to be overlooked. I mean, we've always had this, you know, UK's had this traditional. Historical trading relationship with Southeast Asia. You know, it's tended to favour the EU. I don't think many people actually understand that Turkey has a customs union with the EU. So I don't think that's an issue for anybody. And Robin's raising his hand there. So yeah, I'll let him elaborate on that.
Well, let me build on that, because I agree with you. And really an answer, Gavrak, to your question to us both. I don't think it's because Turkey has a customs union agreement that somehow it was why it was unrecognised. I think the focus, the commercial focus, has been so much on Europe and then subsequently how do we deal with Brexit, along with what is our trading relationship with America, with the United States, and also the what I would call the Anglosphere, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and Commonwealth, that somehow Turkey doesn't, in the sort of in the exporter's mind, doesn't quite fit into any of those obvious boxes, which I think is a great pity, because I think we could be doing so much more on this. But I think this is changing, and I think Brexit is changing, because I think companies are beginning to look in more detail at what else there is, where else should they be looking. And I think Turkey suddenly becomes a much more interesting destination.
If I can just add a bit more to that, and that, you know, I mean, what was seeing at, over the last 12 months anyway, is inquiries from UK companies, and we mentioned supply chains and onshoring and shortening supply chains away from Southeast Asia. And we've had quite a number of inquiries from UK companies who see Turkey as a manufacturing base for their products and a supplier of their products. And given that Turkey ticks the boxes in terms of its manufacturing capability, in terms of its well-educated workforce, in terms of its management quality, it ticks all those boxes. And this is another opportunity that Turkey has. And as Robin has said, I think Brexit is a bit of a catalyst in terms of that opens people's minds to what a country like Turkey has to offer in relation to what they've previously been trading with in Southeast Asia. And COVID has obviously had an impact on trust for Southeast Asia and China in particular. So all those things come into play when British companies are making decisions on both investments and export opportunities, and also where they're sourcing their products.
Yes, I think Chris left at a very good point where I would like to pick. First of all, yes, I would like to just once perhaps say that this, following the, post-COVID period, nearshoring is very important for global supply chains. And I think for UK companies to try to move their factories from East Asia towards Turkey, the nearshoring concept is a very good one. But then we have the new problem, that is the trade and sustainable development issue that is being discussed by the European Union and all the countries, because now we have new standards. We used to know that non-tariff barriers was about regulatory standards, whether this product is okay, whether it's safe, etc. But now we have human rights issues, labor standards, gender equality issues. And nowadays, we will see that the countries will start looking at where you are supplying your product. So that's a new challenge for the new trade agreement that Turkey will sign with the European Union, if it can pass to this stage. Now, when you look at all of the trade agreements that the European Union is currently conducting, negotiations with the countries, there is always an impact assessment on trade and sustainable development. And Turkey has to be ready for it. Not only it's important for the EU, but it's also important for the UK, because when we are going to upgrade our trade deal with the UK, the UK perhaps will also be interested in putting these provisions conditions into our, you know, renewed agreement, because everybody wants to know where they do supply their products, and due diligence norms will come into play in international trade. And more importantly, and I see these much more important challenges for Turkey's trade and anybody's trade than just asymmetrical problems. That is the new deal in town, I would say. Thank you.
Hey, Mustafa.
Oh, thank you very much, Yaprak. Perhaps I can contribute to this debate by looking at the institutional aspects of Turkey relations, or how a kind of working relationship can be created in the following years. I'm a political scientist, and perhaps because of that reason, actually, I see a deadlock, I mean, a political deadlock in Turkey's relations with the European Union. I mean, Pınar meticulously explained, customs union is a politically asymmetric deal. And Turkish side clearly is not happy about this side of the issue. Turkish side is not represented in decision-making mechanisms, and they would like certain institutional reforms in that context. I mean, it's not only about expanding a customs union deal or modernizing it to cover other areas. It is also about a political aspect of the issue. And when we look at European Union side, we see that they are clearly taking Turkey seriously when it comes to economic interactions. I mean, Turkey is an important economic actor, and European Union policymakers are aware of this situation, and they don't want to cut ties with Turkey for understandable reasons. But on the other hand, they are not likely, or they are not willing to make political commitments. And the problem in this context is what both parties need to do in order to steer a course out of this crisis. Well, I mean, scholars are working on this issue. They are coming up with alternative conceptualizations. For instance, some scholars are talking about differentiated integration. I mean, integrating in certain areas, but developing a functionalist or transactionalist cooperation in other areas. But I mean, currently, as far as I can tell, I don't see a viable institutional alternative, and more importantly, political willingness to kind of develop relations further. And from this point of view, perhaps it will not be unjust to say that the European Union does not have a clear strategic vision when it comes to its relations with Turkey. So this should be sorted out. And from a political point of view, I think this would be an important issue in the following months or perhaps years. And my final point, I see upgrading customs union is the most sensible way to move forward in this context. It will be kind of a positive development for both sides, but how this political deadlock or stalemate will be able to overcome, I think this is a question that we need to think a little bit more, perhaps in the following months.
Okay, so we have seven questions. What I'm going to do is I'm going to group them into two. So in the first round, I'm going to pose three questions, and then in the second round, I'm going to pose the remaining questions, and then we can hopefully finish in a timely manner. The first set of questions is about the future and about the future of bilateral trade. Mikhail, who is an LSE student, who's also one of my students, actually. So he's thanking you for the insightful discussions, and he has a general question. He's wondering if there is any political risk, perhaps, perceived by British companies in their investments, in terms of, for instance, Turkish Central Bank independence, or perhaps Turkey following a different economic model than what UK businesses are accustomed to. And would that be something that would impact bilateral trade policy negotiations or investments in Turkey? Or perhaps, you know, I to add on to that, it's like economic interests or economic interests. When there's an opportunity, people would invest in a country, not necessarily look into, you know, political dynamics as such. And then we have a question from Görkem Altınurs, who is also my co-author from Bilecik University. So he's asking, what kind of new areas of trade would we expect to see in phase two free trade agreement between Turkey and the UK? So basically he's asking for an update of where we are in terms of negotiations or updating the FTA. And finally, we have a question from Sıtkı Terlioğlu, who is a commercial lawyer, who is asking specifically to Robin, how do you see the likelihood of Turkey joining the EU? If that is so in the future, how would that affect the trade relationship between Turkey and the UK? So any number of you could answer any one of these questions. So there's no strict, I guess, order in this round. Which question you want to answer?
There are two questions which you haven't read. Would you like us to perhaps answer them online by writing? Because there are two more questions, but I'll try to answer them.
I thought that if we can be quick, then we can post the questions and then, you know,
I'll try to just type while you're speaking the other speakers. Perhaps it's going to be easier because we have 10 minutes.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine, Pınar. Thank you very much for that. Yeah, and I think the audience can see the questions and the answers as well. So for the other questions, they can follow the Q&A portion of the Zoom. Yeah. So for the questions that I read out loud, which one of you would like to go first?
Robin,
I take, there was one specifically for me, and I think it was Turkey's aspirations to join the EU, is that it? If I remember rightly, yeah. The answer is, I'm probably not absolutely up to date, but I think it, as I understand it, it still remains an aspiration. But I would say that with Brexit, Turkey has lost within the EU, one of its strong champions, looking further ahead. And I would absolutely endorse what Mustafa was saying, that, and indeed Pınar, that really the next stage in the relationship to, with Turkey and the EU is undoubtedly looking at customs union modernization. And what I think interests the UK in this is how those negotiations will relate to our FTA 2.0 with Turkey. And I mean, we've said that we want to start those negotiations within 2 years. And Chris, you said that it's now slated for September of this year. I know that there is a momentum to try and get those going. And but these are going to be hugely complicated on the Turkish side. By the timetable, I would imagine, for the customs union modernization. But Pınar and Mustafa are probably much better qualified than me to comment on that.
Yeah, if I can just add, I mean the point you were making, I mean, does trade, is a trade affected by, you know, issues relating to, you know, political problems. I mean, yes, it's always difficult to separate, you know, political issues and you know, trade issues. And I mean, my view on trade is, you know, from a business perspective anyway, and that's the way I look at things. You know, trade is about business. It's not about ideology, and it's not about, you know, political doctrine or whatever. And I think that's something that governments have to learn when it comes to, you know, developing their export and trade strategies, is that, you know, I'm not saying that you should compromise on rule of law and you should compromise on human rights. I'm not saying that at all. But you can't have a hard and fast ideology that's preventing you from, you know, trading with a market. And and things change. I mean, they evolve. And you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be the economy that drives the country forward. So compromises have to be made on many issues, and you know, that takes time. It's not going to happen quickly, and you know, we have similar issues in UK. And but you know, these things do pass, and that's when you know, things start to move forward again. So yeah, I mean, yeah, they will have an impact, and people. I mean, unfortunately, Turkey has had a bad press recently, and some of it justified, some of it not. And people make decisions on what they see and read in media, unfortunately. And it, you know, it's the role that you know, we together with our colleagues in DIT and when Robin was trade envoy to actually dispel some of these misleading media stories that you know, come across you know, for Turkey that don't reflect too well. So again, for me, it's all about a long-term commitment, and you know, the facts are obvious. There's no question about what Turkey has to offer, and you know, as much as we can to keep you know the political ideologies out of the way and focus on building business, then you know, the better it will be for both countries.
Okay, brilliant, Mustafa. Do you want to add anything to that?
Oh, yeah, Prak, I guess, I mean, distinguished panelists pretty much covered all aspects, and I have nothing more to add, actually.
Okay, I can see that Pınar is typing an answer to Ceren Serbest's question, so I'm going to skip to... Go ahead, Prak. Pınar.
There was one question, I'm not sure whether you have read about your co-author, Görkem. I don't know whether we've asked to that question already. But I would perhaps say a couple of words about that question.
Okay, yes, please. Yes, please. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much to Görkem Altınörs for the question. As far as I remember, you know, some of the declarations which was made during, you know, when this trust was still the trade secretary for the United Kingdom, I think in the next phase of this trade negotiations will come public procurement. Of course, services, because the existing deal only, you know, covers trade in goods, but now we really have to focus on services, like Chris also said, for you know, construction services, healthcare services, etc., which you know, both of the parties, and especially of course fintech and financial services, will need to be covered due to the you know impressive experience of the United Kingdom and for construction services for Turkey. But I believe the most important thing, perhaps I would expect, is some investment for electric vehicles. Because there's a you know huge investment from Turkey's side and the United Kingdom side, and this is the potential area for the parties to work on. So therefore, you know, of course, then the rules of origin will play an important role, but it is you know too heavy for tonight. We can't go into detail, but I would say that the most practical area where we can look at it is an agreement on investment facilitation between the parties. Public procurement, the inclusion of services, and in the very near future, I would expect, as I said, for renewables as well as the electric vehicles. Thank you.
Could I just add to Pinar's list? Yes, please. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty certain that agriculture has also been very much included as being not covered at the moment. But certainly a really interesting area. And agriculture, including agribusiness and tech, and there's some very interesting areas for UK and Turkey in that sector.
Brilliant. So again, I think Pınar is typing an answer to Ceren's question. So I will perhaps end with an optimistic question, if a question can be optimistic. But Kevin Hooker, who is a Douglas Winters Associated Limited, I think is asking, and I think he has met you, Robin, before. So he's asking if the pandemic is kind of over now, though it has subsided in significance. Are the conditions good for investment now that we are moving forward from the pandemic?
I'm either going to defer to Chris on this, but I'm inclined to say to Kevin, you'll have to make your own investment decisions. I mean, I don't know the circumstances that you're looking at that question, but I will answer it in the general phase. So if you're looking long term, and I come back to the points I made at the beginning, you've got some fundamentals which are strong, and you've got huge interest both in the UK and Turkey to look at this commercial relationship in the longer term. So I would think that if you're looking to invest in this area, one should keep looking. But I would defer to Chris. I mean, we're everyone's going through a very, very tricky, uncertain time post-COVID, and in the UK's case, post-Brexit. It is an uncertain climate to do anything at the moment. But I come back to this longer term consideration for our relationship, and that is, in my view, positive.
No, absolutely, Robin. And you know, again, I think this has been a clear strategy for the UK government for Turkey. It is a long term commitment. And we see it, in many areas in terms of, how they manage that relationship and keep it sustainable. But it is uncertain. I mean, sustainability is not an option. It's not a choice. ESG, everybody's got to be involved. Turkey's got a role to play as well as UK has to play. And investment opportunities in Turkey are there. There's no doubt about that. And we see the growth of e-commerce in Turkey. We've got some very successful organizations that are now expanding out of Turkey. Getty was now opening up in UK. They're also looking at the US. Other e-commerce companies in Turkey have a lot of potential for growth outside their domestic market. And when it comes to electric vehicles, I mean, Ford Otosan, which is producing Ford Transit vans, they are launching, I think, this quarter. I'm not sure whether it's in February or March, but with the latest technology batteries. Unlike commercial vehicles, that will be a bit of a game changer in terms of people turning to zero emissions and electric vehicles, electric-like commercials, which this new battery technology, I can't tell you where the batteries are coming from, but they will be in these vehicles, that will double the length of travel that these vehicles can go without a charge, and that will be a major change. And that will increase the number of vehicles like commercials that are exported from UK to Turkey. So that's another sector that has great opportunities for both countries.
Any other final thoughts? No, okay, I think so. We can end the event. It has been a great pleasure to have the opportunity for both me and I'm sure for the audience to have you with us today. Thank you to our speakers for such an excellent discussion, and to you all in the audience for your questions. If you would like to learn more about the European Institute and LSE Turkish Studies, please head to our websites, although I must admit that the Turkish Studies website needs a major facelift, but we'll get there. So thanks once again, and goodbye. See you later.